We can tell that all the glory and splendor, all the pleasures and enjoyments of the world are vanity and nothing. And yet these nothings take up all our thoughts and engross all our affections. They stifle the better inclinations of our soul and envelop us into many a sin. It may be in a sober mood we give them the slight and resolve to be no longer deluded with them. But those thoughts seldom outlive the next temptation. The vanities which we have shut out at the doors get in at a postern. There are still some pretensions, some hopes that flatter us, and after we have been frustrated 1,000 times, we must be continually repeating the experiment. The least differences of circumstances is enough to delude us, make us expect that satisfaction in one thing which we have missed in another. But could we once get clearly off and come to a serious and real contempt of worldly things? This were a very considerable advancement in our way. The soul of man is of a vigorous and active nature, and hath in it a raging and unextinguishable thirst, an immaterial kind of fire, always catching at some objects or other, in conjunction wherewith it thinks to be happy, and were at once rent from the world and all the bewitching enjoyments under the sun, it would quickly search after some higher and more excellent object to satisfy its ardent and importune cravings. In being no longer dazzled with glittering vanities, would fix on that supreme and all-sufficient good. It would discover such beauty and sweetness as would charm and overpower all its affections. The love of the world and the love of God are like the scales of a balance. As the one falls, the other rises. When our natural inclinations prosper and the creature is exalted in our soul, religion is faint and doth languish. But when earthly objects wither away and lose their beauty, and the soul begins to cool and flag in its prosecution of them, then the seeds of grace take root, and the divine life begins to flourish and prevail. It doth therefore nearly concern us to convince ourselves of the emptiness and the vanity of creature enjoyments, and reason our heart out of love with them. Let us seriously consider all that our reason and our faith, our own experience or the observation of others, can suggest to this effect. Let us ponder the matter over and over and fix our thoughts on this truth till we become really persuaded of it. Amidst all our pursuits and designs, let us stop and ask ourselves, for what end is all of this? And what do I aim? Can the gross and the muddy pleasures of sense, or a heap of white and yellow earth, or the esteem and affection of silly creatures like myself, satisfy a rational and immortal soul? Have I not tried these things already? Will they have a higher relish, and yet me more contentment tomorrow than yesterday, or the next year than they did the last? There may be some little difference betwixt that which I am now pursuing and that which I enjoyed before. I am not sure my former enjoyments did show as pleasant and promises fair before I attained them. like the rainbow. They looked very glorious at a distance, but when I approached, I found nothing but emptiness and vapor. Oh, what a poor thing would be the life of man if it were capable of no higher enjoyments. I cannot insist on this subject, and there is less need when I remember to whom I am writing. Yes, my dear friend, you have had as great experience of the emptiness and vanity of human things, and have at present as few worldly engagements as any that I know. I have sometimes reflected on those passages of your life wherewith you have pleased to acquaint me, and methinks through all I can discern a design of the divine providence to wean your affections from everything here below. The trials you have had of those things which the world dotes upon have taught you to despise them, and you have found by experience that neither the endowments of nature nor the advantages of fortune are sufficient for happiness, that every rose has its thorns, and there may be a worm at the foot of the fairest gourd, some secret and undiscerned grief which may make a person deserve the pity of those who, perhaps, do admire or envy their supposed felicity. If any earthly comforts have got too much of your heart, I think they have been your revelation. Relations and friends, and the dearest of these, are removed out of the world, so that you must raise your mind toward heaven when you would think upon them. Thus God hath provided that your heart may be loosed from the world, that he may not have any rival in your affection, which I have always observed to be so large and unbounded, so noble and disinterested, that no inferior object can answer or deserve it. When we have got our corruptions restrained, and our natural appetites and inclinations toward worldly things in some measure subdued, we must proceed to take such exercises as have a more immediate tendency to excite and awaken the divine life. And first, let us endeavor conscientiously to perform those duties which religion doth require, and whereunto it would incline us if it did prevail in our souls. If we cannot get our inward disposition presently charged, let us study at least to regulate our outward deportment. If our hearts be not yet inflamed with divine love, let us, however, our own allegiance to that infinite majesty by attending his service and listening to his word, by speaking reverently of his name and praising his goodness and exhorting others to serve and obey him. If we want that charity and those bowls of compassion which we ought to have toward our neighbor, yet must we not omit any occasion of doing them good? If our hearts be haughty and proud, we must nevertheless study a modest and humble deportment. These external performances are of little value in themselves, yet they may help us forward to better things. The apostles indeed tell us that bodily exercise profits little, but he seems not to affirm that it is altogether useless. It is always good to be doing what we can, for then God is wont to pity our weakness and assist our feeble endeavors. And when true charity and humility and other graces of the divine spirit come to take root in our souls, they will exert themselves more freely and with less difficulty if we have before been accustomed to express them in our outward conversations. Nor need we fear the imputation of hypocrisy, though our actions do thus somewhat outrun our affections, seeing they do still proceed from a sense of our duty, and our senses not appear before better than we are, but that we may really become so. But as inward acts have a more immediate influence on our soul, to mould it to the right temper and frame, so ought we must be most frequent and sedulous in the exercise of them. Let us be often lifting up our hearts toward God. And if we do not say that we love Him above all things, let us at least acknowledge that it is our duty and would be our happiness so to do. Let us lament the dishonor done to Him by foolish and sinful men, and applaud the praises and adorations that are given Him by that blessed and glorious company above. Let us resign and yield ourselves up unto Him 1,000 times, to be governed by His laws and disposed of at His pleasure. And though our stubborn hearts should start back and refuse, let us tell Him that we are convinced that His will is always just and good, and therefore desire Him to do with us whatever He pleases, whether we will it or not. And so, for begetting in us an universal charity toward men, we must be frequently putting up wishes for their happiness and blessing every person that we see. And when we have done anything for the relief of the miserable, we may second it with earnest desire that God would take care of them and deliver them out of all their distress. Thus, should we exercise ourselves unto godliness, and when we are employing the powers that we have, the Spirit of God is wont to strike in and elevate these acts of our soul beyond the pitch of nature and give them a divine impression. And after the frequent reiteration of these, we shall find ourselves more inclined unto them, they flowing with greater freedom and ease. I shall mention but 2 other means for begetting that holy and divine temper of spirit, which is the subject of the present discourse, and at first is a deep and serious consideration of the truths of our religion, and that both as to the certainty and importance of them, the assent which is ordinarily given to the divine truth is very faint and languid, very weak and ineffectual, flowing only from a blind inclination to follow that religion which is in fashion, or a lazy indifferency and unconcernedness whether things be so for or not. Men are unwilling to quarrel with the religion of their country, and since all of their neighbors are Christians, they are content to be so. But they are seldom at the pains to consider the evidence of those truths, or to ponder the importance and tendency of them. And thence it is that they have so little influence on their affections and practice. Those spiritless and paralytic thoughts, as one doth rightly term them, are not able to move the will and direct the hand. We must therefore endeavor to work up our minds to a serious belief and full persuasion of divine truths, and to a sense and feeling of spiritual things. Our thoughts must dwell upon them till we be both convinced of them and deeply affected with them. Let us urge forward our spirit, make them approach the visible world, and fix our minds upon immaterial things, till we clearly perceive that these are no dreams, nay, that all things are dreams and shadows beside them. When we look about us and behold the beauty and magnificence of this godly frame, the order and the harmony of the whole creation, let our thoughts from thence take their flight toward the omnipotent wisdom and the goodness which did at first produce and doth still establish and uphold the same. When we reflect upon ourselves, let us consider that we are not a mere piece of organized matter, a curious and well-contrived engine, that there is more in us than flesh and blood and bones, even a divine spark capable to know and love and enjoy our Maker. And though it be now exceedingly clogged with its dull and lumpish companion, yet ere long it shall be delivered and can subsist without the body, as well as that can do without the clothes which we throw off at our pleasure. Let us often withdraw our thoughts from this earth, this scene of misery and folly and sin, raise them toward that more vast and glorious world, whose innocent and blessed inhabitants solace themselves eternally in the divine presence, and know no other passions but an unmixed joy and an unbounded love. And then consider how the blessed Son of God came down to this lower world to live among us and die for us, that he might bring us to a portion of the same felicity, and think how he hath overcome the sharpness of death, opened the kingdom of heaven to all believers, and is now set down on the right hand of the Majesty on high, yet is not the less mindful of us, but receives our prayers and presents them unto his Father, and is daily visiting his church with the influence of his Holy Spirit, as the sun reaches us with his beams. The serious and frequent consideration of these and such other divine truths is the more proper method to beget that lively faith which is the foundation of religion, the spring and the root of the divine life. Let me further suggest some particular subjects of meditation for producing the several branches of it. And first, to inflame our souls with the love of God, let us consider the excellency of his nature and his love and kindness toward us. It is little we know of the divine perfections, and yet that little may suffice to fill our souls with admiration and love, to ravish our affections, as well as to raise our wonder, for we are not merely creatures of sense, that we should be incapable of any other affection but that which enters by the eyes. The character of any excellent person whom we have never seen will many times engage our hearts, make us hugely concerned in all his interests. And what is it, I pray you, that engages us so much to those with whom we are converse? I cannot think that is merely the color of their face, in their comely proportions, for then we should fall in love with statues and pictures and flowers. These outward accomplishments may a little delight the eye, but would never be able to prevail so much on the heart if they did not represent some vital perfection. We either see or apprehend some greatness of mind, or vigor of spirit, or sweetness of disposition, some sprightliness, or wisdom, or goodness, which charm our spirit and command our love. Now these perfections are not obvious to the sight. The eyes can only discern the signs and effects of them. And if it be the understanding that directs our affection, and vital perfections prevail with it, certainly the excellencies of the divine nature, the traces whereof we cannot but discover in everything we behold, would not fail to engage our hearts if we did not seriously view and regard them. Shall we not be infinitely more transported with that almighty wisdom and goodness which fills the universe and displays itself in all the parts of the creation, which establishes the frame of nature and turns the mighty wheels of providence and keeps the world from disorder and ruin? Then with the faint rays of the very same perfections which we meet within our fellow creatures, shall we dote on the sacred pieces of a rude and imperfect picture, and never be affected with the original beauty? This were an unaccountable stupidity and blindness. Whatever we find lovely in a friend or in a saint ought not to engross, to elevate our affections. We should conclude with ourselves that if there be so much sweetness in a drop, there must be infinitely more in a fountain. If there be so much splendor in a ray, what must the sun be in its glory? Nor can we pretend the remoteness of the object, as if God were at too great a distance for our converse or our love. He is not far from every one of us, for in him we live, we move, and we have our being. We cannot open our eyes, but we must behold some footsteps of his glory, and we cannot turn toward him, but we shall be sure to find his intent upon us, waiting as it were to catch a look, ready to entertain the most intimate fellowship and communion with us. Let us therefore endeavor to raise our minds to the clearest conceptions of the divine nature. Let us consider all his works do declare, or his word doth discover of him unto us. Let us especially contemplate that visible representation of him which was made in our nature by his Son, who was the brightness of his glory, and the express image of his person.